All right, hour two, Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Myself, Andy Pate, of course, Charlie Grimes, our engineer, Dr. Bruce Everett joining us now. He is a board of director from the CO2 Coalition. Dr. Bruce, welcome. We normally have Mr. Wrightstone on with us, but you are filling in, and I am sure you will do a fabulous job.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, John and Andy. Greg is a good friend of mine. He's done a great job. He's a great scientist.
We always enjoy having him, by the way. Try to on a pretty routine basis. Now, we've got something going on, and our signal goes all the way up into Wyoming, so this will fit in perfectly. I've got in my notes here that Trump is ready to move forward with a 5,000 oil well and gas project in Wyoming, which, by the way, benefits a lot of our listeners that are in that area, but Colorado as well. Actually, the whole nation, I should say, Dr.
It's
Bruce.
Fantastic. Yeah,
it's fabulous.
Well, the United States, John and Andy, has huge energy resources. And one of the things that we've been fighting in the CO2 coalition is this nonsensical idea that we ought to limit our fossil fuel production because of carbon dioxide.
Right.
This makes no sense at all. You know, 50 years ago, when I started working in the energy industry, U.S. oil production was on the way down, and people thought that would continue. Mm. And we didn't realize, first of all, how big our resource base was.
Right.
And secondly, how good our technology is. Mm. All the government has to do is get out of the way, and the industry will develop all these areas, all these resources, and all the government needs to do is to make sure that the infrastructure is available to move it where it needs to be.
Dr. Everett, now that the industry has leaped forward in its technology with all the fracking technologies and so forth, and it can reach in to where oil was previously not as easily, you know, let's face it, not as easily found, could we be looking at an oil boom? Because you've had, let's face it, bad leadership hold us back. And in the meantime, the industry was developing great drilling tactics. Are they ready to just go nuts?
Well, let me put it this way. For the last 150 years where the oil industry has been in existence, every year in the United States, we find more oil than we use.
Right.
And the reason for that is technology outstrips depletion.
Right.
Now, you can't guarantee that that'll always be true, but it's always been true in the past. My personal view is do not bet against technology. Now, let me just tell you this. When I first went to work for Exxon in 1980, our management didn't think that the oil market could be in balance in the year 2000 at a price lower than about $200 a barrel.
Really? In 1980? So 20 years later, they were thinking that.
Well, in 1980, they thought that by the year 2000, you'd need $200 a barrel.
Wow.
Year 2000, it was much lower than that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they got wrong was they didn't understand the power of their own technology.
There you go.
Sorry to interrupt. This is like Al Gore predicting 20-foot high waves, you know, crashing over California.
Well, but you know, in their defense, to your point, Dr. Everett, we didn't have the technology then that we have today, fracking and the ability to pull oil out of the ground like we have have now. And now that we have that, of course, it has changed things immensely. Although, and again, I was not in the oil and gas industry. I'm a car guy, come out of the automotive industry and so on. And I will say in 1980, I didn't know much about that end of things. I had a good friend of my dad's that was a core sample driller that would go around to different areas of the country taking samples to determine, you know, what was down there and what kind of oil can we extract and so on and so forth. And that was about the extent of what I knew, Dr. Everett, when it came to that. But you had to believe, though, and this is where I struggle a little bit with this, is you had to believe that, wait a minute, technology, even in 1980, was far better than it was in 1970, which is far better than it was in 1960. So why wouldn't you have been led to believe that it would continue to move forward in that area even in 1980?
Depends on how big a bet you're willing to make and how conservative you want to be. When I was teaching, gentlemen, I always told my students, don't bet against technology. It's not a good idea. Let me make another point, because we have a very big oil resource base in the United States that we're in the process of developing, but we have an even bigger natural gas resource base.
Right, right.
And the difference here is that once you find commercial quantities of oil, you can pretty much move it by ship, by truck, by barge, right, by rail.
Right.
Gas requires pipelines.
Yes.
And we've been living in an environment for many years now in which all kinds of constraints are put on our pipeline production. Now, I live in Massachusetts, and the state government here tries to block natural gas from coming in here because they want us to use windmills and solar to power our homes and heat our food and our hot water. And nobody wants it. So we end up paying very high prices for natural gas when it's very cheap on the Gulf or in Pennsylvania.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because in your area too, don't you also still use heating oil in a lot of the homes to heat the homes, whereby gas would be a much better, you know, alternative? Or am I wrong in that?
No, that's absolutely correct. And anybody that's changing out their furnace who has access to natural gas will almost always switch from heating oil to natural gas. It's a better fuel, it's cleaner, and it's cheaper.
Right.
If we unlock this through decent government policies, which we're now starting to see, then the American people are going to have abundant oil and gas at low cost, not just for our grandchildren, but I believe for our grandchildren's grandchildren.
Agree.
Dr. Everett, I mean, you guys are still using heating oil up there. I had no idea.
Oh,
Does your flag have 13 stars? I'm just curious, you know, because we've kind of moved ahead of that. Let me ask you another question, because it's going to be incredible what we're opening up in Wyoming. I think there's going to be an oil boom there. What about the president's aspirations in Alaska?
Well, I think as long as the president opens these federal areas to exploration, the industry's going to know what to do. And by the way, just to make my, I have a special spot in my heart for Wyoming because I lived up in northeast Wyoming for 2 years working in Exxon's coal industry.
Cool.
And Wyoming is one of the best places in the United States to get into the resource business. So it's an automatic place to pick if you want to start developing additional resources, whether it be coal or natural gas or oil or even uranium at some point. So I think the president's got the right attitude. We're not going to stop fossil fuel production in order to stop carbon dioxide emissions, which cost the American people a lot of money and carry no benefit at all. And we're going to open these things up so that you and everybody else has abundant, cheap energy for the foreseeable future. I'm very optimistic about this now because I think the American people's eyes have been open on this.
I was reading, Dr. In fact, my son and I were talking about this just last week, before I even booked you to come on, and talking about what's going on in Wyoming and so on. I just was doing some research, and this is at current levels, current rate of production. So to your point, we continue to find more, we continue to improve our ways of producing and so on. And currently, right now, the United States of America has enough recoverable natural gas to last roughly 86 years, and that's without finding anything new at all. That is a huge amount.
Absolutely. And people get confused. When we use the term reserves, that usually means the amount that's already been drilled and we know is there.
Correct.
We use the term resources to mean all the stuff we haven't found yet. So the reserves are kind of like what you have in your pantry.
Right.
And people kept talking for years, well, if I run out of food in my pantry, I'm going to starve to death. No, you won't. You'll
go buy more.
That's
right.
Just a thing called a store.
Well, in this case, you know, to your point, Dr. Everett, we find more pockets. We find more deposits. We improve our technology to retrieve those particular pockets and so on. I mean, us in Colorado, if there's anybody that, you know, should know how this works, or folks that live in Colorado, because we've been using fracking and things along those lines now for quite some time, and it's helped our state. If we'd had the right government here in the state, we'd even be better off long term. Fortunately, Wyoming does, and they're going to reap the benefits of that.
And they're prepared to do it, too. If you look at the other end of the spectrum, gentlemen, in New York State, for example, there's a lot of gas resource in the western part of the state. It's forbidden by state law to develop it. And why is that? Because those are largely poor Republican areas out in the state, and the state is run by the people in Manhattan. They think this is, they don't like this. But if you allowed those resources to be developed, the people in the western part of New York would be thrilled. They'd get some economic development, and you'd have more northeast gas to spread around to New England and New York. It's there.
I've got one question really quick. Just really quick, jumping back to the pipelines, just to make sure that, and maybe you know this answer, maybe you don't, Dr. Everett, but on average, you know, what does it cost today? Because even the pipeline technology has improved greatly from what it used to be. On like a per foot or per mile basis, what's it cost to put a pipeline in now versus what it used to?
Overland, it costs probably $1 million a mile.
Okay.
some years ago.
Is that all?
It was probably, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, 1,000 miles, that's $1 billion.
Right. Good point.
But, you know.
Sorry, you recoup that pretty quick.
You do. And typically, and just make, again, make sure that I'm following correctly. Typically, you're going to, unless you're exporting, you know, liquefied natural gas or doing something along those lines, you're only piping it to where your general uses are. So wherever your big city is, or maybe some of the surrounding rural areas and so on, you're not necessarily pumping it from California to Washington, D.C. Am I right in my thought process?
You're absolutely correct. Normally what we have is big trunk lines, which is, say, 3 feet in diameter.
Okay.
It can move long distances.
I know exactly how those look here in Colorado. Yep.
And they go to the city gate, and they're divided into smaller pipelines that reach various neighborhoods. And then the pipes come down your street and into your house. You know, I think there's a funny story that I always tell my students. The father of the American pipeline industry was Nazi Admiral Dönitz. Because at the beginning of World War II, we were shipping our oil around the coast in tankers. Right. And he sent his U-boats over to sink them. So we said, we better not tolerate that. So we started to build these big pipelines in the interior of the country. And we now have a very good system, but it needs to be expanded. Mm-hmm. And you can't allow people in New York to say, okay, right, you can bring it here, but no farther.
Right. Good point. Great point. Go ahead, Andy.
Last question, because and it's a moral question, okay? Because you were talking about Western New York and how New York is holding them back. Let's talk about Western United States, more importantly, California. Isn't it immoral for a state to block off the incredible oil resources off their coast for the rest of the country? I mean, isn't this a federal issue? Isn't this, to me, it should be a federal issue. It should be a because you're actually coming, when you hold back the energy for America, you're making us less safe.
Well, and you're absolutely correct. And what makes this even worse is California's highways are clogged with automobiles using gasoline. And they don't like refineries, and they don't like oil production.
Right.
They want someone else to do that for them.
Right.
And I think that makes your moral point even stronger.
Yeah, very good point. Great point. All right, Dr. Everett, thank you. It's always a joy having you guys on. I appreciate it very much, the work that you guys do at the CO2 Coalition. How do folks follow you?
If you log on to co2coalition.org, there's a wealth of information there. You'll find all Greg Wrightstone's books. You'll find all the articles written by our 200 members, and there's a learning center for kids. All the information you need about this is there.
Okay, awesome. Put that into my notes, as we always do. And again, we appreciate you guys being a regular guest of ours. I learn so much every time you guys are on, and you're just a wealth of information and really giving the truth in a way that I think everybody can understand, which I appreciate greatly.
Well, thanks for having me on the program.
You're very welcome, Dr. Bruce. Thank you very much. Have a great rest of your day. This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.